Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Welcome to Capital Irish, the Irish-related program that comes to you every Sunday at high noon on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And of course, you can listen to it from any part of the world, from the North to the South Pole, on wellingtonaccessradio.org.nz. My name is Jim Frail, originally from County Mayo. I am one of a number of Irish presenters from different parts of Ireland who help bring this Irish-related programme to you, the listeners. With me in the studio doing the important technical job is Marion Grealis, who is also one of our presenters and does a great job in both roles. We are also supported by our good sponsors, the Hutt Valley Irish Society, Susie and the late Peter McGuinness, and the Wellington Irish Trust. There has been a few Irish happenings this month, March. Number one would be St. Patrick's Day celebrations, which have become a worldwide event with many St. Patrick's Day parades, including our own one right here in our capital city of Wellington, which had a very good turnout this year and very enjoyable, I will say. I met up even with many of our own Capital Irish presenters. It was a nice sunny day. Now, as I mentioned about the famous one in New York, which has probably overshadows all down through the years, this year's Grand Marshal was a Mayo woman from Ballinay, and her name is Maggie Timoney. She is the president and CEO of Heineken United States. She is the first woman to hold that position. That's for the beer company. She was also a talented basketball player when she studied at Iona University. So that parade, the New York one, it's regarded as a great honour to be appointed the Grand Marshal, as I said, of one of the most famous. Now, this year's St. Patrick's Day in Dublin was the biggest ever recorded, with 4,200 participants and, would you believe, more than 650,000 people lined the streets to watch it. The Grand Marshal was the late show host, Patrick Kilty, who is incidentally a native of Downpatrick, County Down. Why do I mention that? Well, that is the burial place of the famous saint, St. Patrick. Now, there was also in New York, of course, the Shamrock Ceremony at the White House, where the Irish Taoiseach, this year Leo Varadkar, presented the American president with a bowl of shamrock to mark St. Patrick's Day. Do any of you know which year the first bowl of shamrock was presented to an American president? I'm sure some of you do, but for those who don't, which included myself until I read it, the year was 1952, and the president was Harry Truman. Now, that's the one who ordered the two atomic bombs to be dropped on two Japanese cities in 1944, killing 214,000 civilians. As Brendan Behan used to say, the man with the small bomb is called a terrorist, and the man with the big bomb is called a statesman. Grain of truth in that. Anyway, this, as I said, that particular year, 1952, was presented by the Irish ambassador, the Shamrock, that is, to the United States. And at the time, the name of the ambassador was John Hearn. He presented it to officials at the White House as Harry Truman was out of town. But of course, Harry was very impressed and later sent the ambassador a message of thanks in which he said, that he hoped relations between the two countries will continue to be on a good and effective level. Now, John Haines' gesture moved St. Patrick's Day onto the political agenda in the United States and brought it from Irish America to all of America. The Irish Central, that's the newspaper that I've seen all that stuff in, said that the Shamrock ceremony slowly evolved. And by the time John Kennedy, who was the first Irish-American Catholic president, was in the White House, it had become a full-blown media event. And so it has continued with every American president since. Bill Clinton was the first one who wanted only the Taoiseach to bring the Shamrock, not lower-ranked Shamrock bearers. He hosted lavish St. Patrick's Day celebrations and was the first to include Northern Irish politicians in vices, and of course that led on to the Good Friday Agreement. Now in 2020, there was no presentation. Why? Well, because of COVID, of course, the pandemic, and the same applied in 2021. Leo Varadkar, who incidentally was the present Taoiseach, but would you believe today, Thursday, because this is recorded a few days before you're hearing it, that Taoiseach has shocked the nation and the Irish communities around the world by resigning. So that's a big one. We'll talk about that in future programs, I'm sure. But anyway, he was able to do the honours and with Joe Biden this year. And there was some backlash, quite a bit of backlash from Irish politicians. Why? Because some of them had called for a boycott in response to Joe Biden's support for the Israeli government and the killing of so many civilians in Gaza. In fact, he is known in some Irish quarters as they call him Genocide Joe. But give Varadkar his due. He made a very, very moving speech at the Kennedy Library in Boston, condemning the American actions in Gaza and spoke out strongly about the man-made famine that is developing there. That's another story. Anyway, after that, it's time for a song. And this time we will have one from the Choral Scholars of the University of Dublin, Ireland, You're My Home. Hope you enjoy it.
Remember that snow like it was yesterday. Every year we're both getting older. I thought I'd be back to you by now, but I'm still on my way. There's a saying, isn't there, that home is where the heart is, but I swear every part of me is. Home is where the heart is.
Another big event in Ireland in the month of March was the family and care referendums on the 8th of March. The result was a big disappointment for all the major political parties, as they all had urged the people to vote yes to changes at the 1937 Irish Constitution. People were asked to remove a reference to marriage as the basis on which the family is founded and replace it with a clause that defines marriages and other durable relationships as families. If passed, it would have been the 39th Amendment to the Irish Constitution, but it was rejected by 67% of the voters. Now, the second referendum was called the Care Referendum and would have removed a reference to women's role in the home as a key support to the state and would have deleted a statement that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. Now, if passed, that would have been called the 40th Amendment. A clause would have been added that the state will strive to support the provision of care by members of a family to one another. Now, that clause was overwhelmingly rejected by the people by 73.9% of the votes. Now, the total number of voters was, of course, only 43.3, which is less than half. The Taoiseach, of course, did not help when he said in an interview, "I don't actually think that it is the state's responsibility. I think it's very much a family responsibility." And he was talking about disabled children and that kind of thing. So the Irish government should have kept the wording of the referendum simple. And when I was used to work, we had a saying, I used to call it KISS, K-I-S-S, which meant keep it simple, stupid. It was that principle. I think that's what the government should have done. But anyway, they'll have egg all over their face over there. All the recent events, great celebrations in Ireland with the news that Cillian Murphy won an Oscar for his best actor in Los Angeles. He was a favourite, of course, to win for his great performance in the movie Oppenheimer. The County Cork man was a very, very modest and humble when he received the award, dedicating his win to the peacemakers of our world. Michael D. Higgins congratulated him on behalf of the nation. The 47-year actor won other awards, of course, this year, like the Golden Globe, the BAFTA, and the Screen Actors Guild Award. But, of course, the Oscar is the jewel in the crown of all acting awards, watched by millions of people around the world. Now, the Oppenheimer film is the story, of course, is the man who created the atomic bomb and how that affected his life. And, of course, it has won 7 Oscars. The Guardian had a story recently about a documentary that's called How We First Bombed New Mexico, The Downwinders, it's called. And of course, that's the true story of the effects on the people of New Mexico after the atomic bomb testing, which of course is not mentioned in the movie. This documentary is about the survivors and the descendants of multi-generational illnesses after the 1945 bomb testing. There are still people, would you believe, 5 generations later, according to the documentary, developing cancer from the effects of those bomb tests. The United States government has never apologized to the people of New Mexico for the terrible price that they pay, that's from cancer deaths and all that, because of course the radiation from the testing. There is a compensation bill that has just been passed by the United States Senate and is expected to pass into law. After that, it's time for a song. Again, another one will have the same singers doing Mogula Mair. Hope you like it.
Shame
People know what Mogila Mare means? Well, it means my gallant darling. Going back to the Oscars winner, that's Cillian Murphy. Earlier this month, a lock of his hair, would you believe, sold for £6,000. Well, you can guess what it'll be worth now, at least double, I would think, after winning the Oscar. And in November, a cap that Murphy wore in Peaky Blinders sold at auction for 20,000 English pounds. Amazing, isn't it? There's a new film just released ahead of St. Patrick's Day, and it's called Quintessentially Irish. It's really a documentary featuring many Irish celebrities and politicians and their views on what it means to be Irish. It features Pierce Brosnan, Gerry Irons, and many Irish other actors and artists. Also Joe Biden, and also some writers that are in there. In fact, there are more than 23 million Americans who claim Irish heritage, and at least 6 million Brits with an Irish grandparent. So they are really the market for this documentary. Well, at least it's a positive picture of the Irish, which reminds me, our Central had an article recently about the ancient order of Hibernians formally protesting and asking Amazon, that's the big, you know, online place, to stop advertising and remove anti-Irish merchandise that defames the Irish community. Especially, there's one of the products that say, T-shirts with the slogans such as "I'm not Irish, but I can drink like one," and of course others that are even more offensive than that. Anyway, I say good on the AOH, people. They would not insult black people or Native Americans, but of course, it's always open season on the Irish. We're supposed to have great sense of humour. Ha, ha, ha. Anyway, another snippet from our central on Master 7th, 1848, was the first time the Irish flag, green, white and orange, was flown publicly for the first time. And to during a young Irelander rebellion in Waterford City. And the leader of the Young Ireland movement was Thomas Francis Marr. Now, Marr and his followers were inspired by the 1848 revolutions across Europe. And on visiting France to congratulate the rebels on overthrowing King Louis-Philippe I, Marr was presented with an Irish tricolour woven out of silk. He returned to Ireland and presented it to the Irish people, explaining the symbolism of the flags. Three colours. The white in the centre signifies lasting truce between the orange and the green. The green, of course, represents Irish nationalism, the orange, Ireland's Protestant minority, and the white, lasting peace between the two. Now, before Irish independence, the flag of Ireland was green with a harp in the centre. The harp remains, of course, as Ireland's national symbol. Thomas Francis Marr was, of course, tried for treason, sentenced to death by the authorities at the time, but the sentence was commuted to banishment to Van Diemen's Land in Australia. He would later escape to a new life in America, where in America he is remembered as a general in the Union Army and, of course, later governor of Montana. He features a lot in the Australian author Thomas Keneally's book, The Great Shame. Thank you all, wherever you may be in the world, for listening to my show today. Now, if you think any of your friends may be interested, don't forget to send them the link on wellingtonaccessradio.org.nz. Fare thee well until next time. Oh, I'll go out with a chieftain song, Cath Caim an Fia. Hope you like it. It's a beautiful piece of music, in my opinion. James Galway is also featured with the chieftains in this one.
Been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That programme was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.